Mr. Erzani. The last time we interacted was in Morocco around the September 07 election, and as you were speaking and listening to Kent, I was thinking of one anecdote, and I'm not sure what it's illustrative of, but it's interesting, which is that Morocco has a very active civil society, and I don't know if I could quantify this, but my guess is that in terms of numbers of non-governmental organizations, the quality of those organizations, the independence of the genuine non-governmental organizations, its only rival in the Arab world, or rivals maybe, you know, Palestinians may have as many, but that's in part because there's been so much international funding. There are a number in Egypt, but most of them are illegal. But Morocco, you know, again, I can't quantify it, but it may have the most and the highest quality. But NDI suffered a bit from this during the September 07 election, when we were working very closely with the CCDH to put on an international election observation mission, which I have to say, I don't know if people realize how rare a genuine international election observation is in the Arab world. They really don't happen often. There are sometimes informal missions. NDI, for example, and IRI sent a group to Egypt for the Egyptian parliamentary and presidential elections. We weren't hampered from doing so, but we were not given full access to polling stations. It was more of what you might call an informal assessment mission, with the reluctant cooperation of the Egyptians. Many other countries, as Kent mentioned, will absolutely reject the notion of international observation as some kind of infringement on sovereignty. Some countries, Algeria is one example, has allowed what I would call limited observation. They brought the UN in. I was actually part of a UN mission in Algeria in 1997. But the constraints were so great and the control was so tremendous that the output of that mission really wasn't worth much. In fact, being one of the delegates, we actually stopped, a few of us stopped that mission from issuing a report. So there never was an official report on the 1997 Algeria election because we felt it was too controlled. And one of the only countries that has allowed genuine observation is Yemen. It's happened also in Iraq and in the Palestinian territories. But we were having what I thought were a very fruitful experience with the CCDH, complete and total access to the polling stations, access to all the information we needed, facilitation of visas. There were a few control issues. I don't want to make it sound like it was all easy. I think we discussed some mutual problems with the Ministry of Interior, and being very used to Arab ministries of interior, we had come to recognize the signs of these things, and at one stage we had to shut off some cell phones because we were tired of getting, you know, sort of vaguely threatening phone calls. But we're used to that. But what I thought was interesting, and it was a good sign, I think, in Morocco, is that the Moroccan NGOs, and particularly the human rights NGOs, started to get suspicious, I think, of NDI's good relationships and started to criticize us. And we started to come under all sorts of attack by the Moroccan NGOs because I think that they just imagined that if we were able to participate this way, that something was wrong. I mean, they just wanted to attack, and we tried to meet with them, and we tried to sort of suggest that we weren't compromising our principles. But a couple of them, in particular, became quite vociferous, and we traded notes a couple of times, I think. And it was interesting, just to end the anecdote, that one of the problems was the issuance of credentials for the domestic monitors. And NDI has been involved in domestic, this is when citizens monitor their own elections, domestic monitoring across the Arab region for almost 15 years. And in many cases, we brought the concept and helped provide training and funding and so on. And in the last Moroccan election, NDI, in fact, encourage the formation of the Collectif, a domestic monitoring organization, provided the training and so on. But the same group that we had had a hand in creating 4 years early sort of turned on us and assumed that somehow we were, you know, complicit with the CCDH. And when we went in to talk to the CCDH about the issue of credentials and why they weren't being issued, we found that the domestic groups found that filling in the forms, which were pretty basic, and we had filled in and received all the credentials, they were rejecting this as somehow an infringement on their independence. And I have to say that I think Mr. Erzani and his staff did yeoman work on the eve of the election, issued the credentials, despite not having received even sort of rudimentary applications. But again, when we suggested in phone calls to these NGOs that they should perhaps back off, and that given our experience, we felt that the CCDH was imposing minimal conditions, in fact, probably fewer conditions than most other countries, again, we got sort of a shower of criticism. So I just thought it was interesting to be on the receiving end of some of this. So just comparatively, I think, Kent, I'll sort of play the mop-up role, I think, and not repeat what Kent has said, because I agree with most of what he said. But on the comparative side, I would agree with the sort of ranking that Kent did. I don't, again, and I'm going to express a few reservations in a moment, I don't want to be accused of being a cheerleader for Morocco. I think Morocco actually does a very good job of promoting itself. I don't necessarily want to take that role. But within it, within the regional context, it is difficult not to pull Morocco out of the group, because it really stands apart from the rest of the group. And I think Kent mentioned some of the reasons why, but I would agree that Algeria, Tunisia, Libya, for different reasons, really don't hold a candle to Morocco in terms of its progress on both a series of democratic freedoms and initiatives, as well as on the human rights side. I think where I would start to add some caveats, though, are in a couple of areas. Actually, I should mention, too, because we're talking a bit about human rights, that Morocco has at least three very, very established and very eminent independent human rights organizations: the Moroccan Association for Human Rights, the Moroccan Organization for Human Rights, and the Moroccan Prison Observation Organization. These are long-standing, very, you know, internationally networked, important organizations. Where I would add, though, some qualifications, some provisos, and so on, a couple of areas. One is the whole political rights agenda, which, as was mentioned, is a part of the remit of the CCDH, and there were recommendations from the Reconciliation Commission that Mr. Erzani mentioned, which recommendations to incorporate the whole gamut of political rights into the Constitution. So freedom of association, freedom of expression, constitutional guarantees of demonstration, political organization, of gathering and striking, and the set of political rights and freedoms that most of us are familiar with. I think to be completely honest about this, I know you mentioned it briefly that it's something you're still working on, but I think from the point of view of an outside observer, not much is happening in that area. In other words, the freedoms and rights that Moroccans enjoy right now, to hold their representatives accountable, to form political parties and so on, appear to be, like many Arab countries, rights that are not rights, but rather privileges that are granted by the king and therefore can be taken away by the king. And some people would argue that Morocco has gone so far it can't go back. I'm not sure if that's really true. And solidifying these things, codifying them, changing the constitution, I think is important. So I think that's an area, an unfinished area would be, to put it mildly. A second challenge, and again it was mentioned by both Kent and our esteemed guest from Morocco, is the question of the importance or the relevance of the political institutions in the country. If the political institutions are not perceived to be the locus of power, in other words, if people's lives are not going to be improved, made better, or even frankly made worse by the outcome, for example, of a parliamentary election, if people don't perceive that political parties and their representatives in the parliament really have much input into how things go, then the political development is always going to be, it's going to stagnate. It's not going to go anywhere. And in the September 07 election, and I didn't bring hard copies of NDI's report in the election, but it can be downloaded through our website. I'll just mention, because I think it needs to be mentioned, that in my experience, and I've been the director of NDI's Middle East program since 96, it was the best administered election I'd seen in an Arab country. It was almost flawless in the sense that it was completely transparent. The ballots were counted on the spot. protocols were given to political parties on the spot. A couple of them were organized enough that they could do their own parallel vote tabulation, so no one really genuinely contested the results. You know, we could complain about the campaign period, and there were some restrictions that were maybe not quite fair. And others have brought up the question of the election system. The election system, I think, needs to be changed, and it probably leads to a fragmentation of the parliament that causes a problem. But in terms of the election administration, it was very, very difficult to fault it, and we didn't. But what we did say, and we said it both in the immediate post-election statement and then in the later report, which took us a few months to write after looking at the complaints and so on, is that the combination of the low turnout and then a huge rate of spoiled ballots, about 19% of the ballots cast were spoiled. And we believe the vast majority of those were spoiled intentionally or just cast as blank ballots, or in other words, people, you know, sort of took the opportunity to go to the polling station, get a ballot, and then not fill it in properly, even though they were relatively easy to understand. And they had symbols for illiterate people and so on. A lot of people said there's a lot of illiteracy in Morocco, that's the problem. It's not really the problem. Also, the rate of spoiled ballots is much higher in the cities than in the countryside, so the illiteracy argument doesn't work that well. You know, we can't get into people's heads, although NDI did a series of focus groups post-election, but it seemed clear that people understood that as much as Morocco has made progress, that real power still resides with the king. So if one is unhappy about one's own life and one's own chances, one's own economic prospects, and I think there is some unhappiness in Morocco. I mean, I think it's very obviously economic development is important, chances for young people and so on. A lot of people took the opportunity of an election to express discontent either by simply not showing up or by showing up and kind of ruining their ballot one way or another. And it struck us as important to note. And, you know, what to do about that, we don't have time necessarily at this moment to talk about that. The political parties were mentioned. I would agree. They're immature. They've been around for a long time, but they're still personality-based, and it's, you know, a political party is still really about getting a position in society and using that to kind of leverage some privilege. It's not really about having an ideological position and putting it forward and then, you know, having promises and carrying out a legislative agenda. And that's something that NDI and others can continue to work on. That's a long-term process. But people have to understand that in Morocco, in my opinion, that there's some hope in the near future that their choices matter, that when they express an opinion, it's reflected in decisions, that they can hold their leaders to account. And as much as the King of Morocco is held in high esteem and has you know, much prestige, there still is a sense, I believe a clear sense, that there's no easy, direct way for a Moroccan citizen to send a message to the people who really pull the levers of power, and it's really not the parliament. And so there's an apathy that has built up, and I think I would argue that there is an underlying sort of ferment that could go in a negative direction in Morocco unless the political system is reformed sufficiently that people feel that that their input matters and that there's kind of a cause and effect to political action. So I'll end there by saying that, you know, I've talked a lot about the political agenda. I think the same thing would go on the human rights agenda. Again, you know, comparatively, tremendous achievements in Morocco. I know that most Moroccans hate this idea of being a model, and I know that that most Moroccans are far too modest to imagine themselves as a model. But the fact is that when you take it all into consideration, Morocco has made tremendous progress across the whole spectrum of political changes. But, and I think it's a big but, whether it's human rights or political freedoms, I think the citizens of Morocco want more. I mean, in a sense, they've had a taste. They know what it's about. They know what might come next. They look towards Europe, for example. Their aspirations are very much, even if they're not westernized, their aspirations, they see the economic and other attractions of Europe, and I think they're looking for more. And how the Moroccan government reacts in giving them more, I think, is going to be a very, very important factor in the success of Morocco over the coming years. Thanks. Very good.